happy.
You're not happy about this? I'm sorry to hear that. Just to double check, obviously, this is the Weekly Newscast. We are now live, and we have Joe Dombrowski on the line to talk some Virgil stories for his upcoming DVD and Global Force Wrestling. Of course, we retweeted it out this morning. Joe, how are you doing, sir?
I am very positive. I'm very happy. I appreciate you guys giving me the time to be here. I'm also very mentally worn out and tired, but I've been juggling, as usual with me, about five or six different projects that have kind of coincided time-wise. But it's all positive, and it's all for the better, and it's all hopefully going to lead to some entertaining content for you and all of your listeners as well. So I'm happy to be doing it.
I'm sure it will. I mean, come on. This is something that's been going for a little bit between you and Virgil. Of course, we've all seen the pictures of him at various events and signing, I guess. And he just, I don't know. Somehow you and him became intertwined. I believe it was because of a photo that you took while you were at one of these signing events next to him. Is that how this worked out? It's kind of crazy.
I never wanted to do this. I never wanted... Fate chose me to do this project. This wasn't the project I wanted to do. This is the project that fate wanted me to do. I was familiar with sort of the scuttlebutt and the talk about the wrestling industry concerning Virgil. But I'd been lucky enough to kind of avoid him, even though we're both a couple of Pittsburgh guys. But out of all places, New Orleans, Louisiana is where this story starts, because I was down there for WrestleCon in 2014. And, big convention, tons of guests, tons of vendors, all wrestling related. But somehow, as fate would have it, I got put right next to Virgil. I don't know how I drew the short straw there, but of course I had to listen to all of his tall tales, and anytime somebody wanted a picture taken, who had to hold the camera? But of course it was me.
That also means people noticed you. So come on, it works out, right?
I was the other guy in Virgil and that other guy. So boy, is that just a big boost for my career. And I figured that, you know what, I survived it. We weren't next to each other so much as our table was in our tables were L-shaped, so my back was to him for most of the weekend intentionally. But then came Steel City Con here in Pittsburgh, and lo and behold, I show up. There's Virgil right next to me. Three entire days, 24 hours over that three-day span, and I heard everything. I heard all of the ridiculous stories that he would tell people, that he was in 17 WrestleManias, and he main evented this, and he main evented that, and he had 20 years in WWE, and him and WrestleMania 4 was actually a tag team match with Virgil. Virgil main evented a WrestleMania. I don't know if you guys know that. And I would watch him harass customers, just get their attention and drag them in and try to shyster them into buying a photo. Some of them hadn't watched wrestling in 20 years. Some of them didn't know wrestling, and they just had a kid or a relative that watched wrestling. And anytime somebody didn't buy anything, he would be so rude and belligerent whenever they left. He was just constantly talking, to the point where the guy at the table on his other side, to his left, somehow found a way to switch tables with somebody else before the end of the weekend. I don't know how he did that. I would have loved to get in on that deal. But I went to Facebook, and I kind of vented. I kind of let it all out, and it was very very cathartic for me. It was very medicinal for me to get that out there. And it was the most popular thing I'd ever written. Or maybe ever done. And you could forget Ring of Honor, 1PW, anything else. That didn't matter. But the fact I was mad at Virgil, and the fact that he would sit there and explain to everybody, that he was supposed to end the Undertaker's win streak, and that there was he had a $7 million contract with Turner, and all this other just insanity.
You know, that $7 million number, though, does kind of sound right, given what they were paying other people to not even be on the show. You know. I'm just saying.
Well, you know, and that's a popular retort I've heard a lot, and I have no doubt that old Verge was making more than he was worth. But let's keep in mind that Bret Hart had, I think, a $9 million contract or thereabouts, and that was, at that point, one of, if not the largest in wrestling history. So I'm not quite going to put Virgil onto that pedestal. But, you know, the weeks after that, I'm like, I never want to deal with Virgil again. I never want to see this guy again. He's just, I mean, maybe he means well, maybe he doesn't realize it, but the way he goes on and on and on, just, it can get on one's nerves. Especially when you know that everything coming out of his mouth, for the most part, is nonsense. And I'm not sure if he knows that it's nonsense. Maybe, maybe not.
This is pro wrestling, Joe. I mean, never let the truth get in the way of a good story, right?
That's absolutely true. As time went on, people would say, you know, you need to do a DVD about this, or you need to do a book of Virgil stories, or you know, different ideas like that. And I would flat out refuse, like, no, because that would involve me talking to him and seeing him. And those are two things I'm not interested in anymore. But again, fate put he and I in the same location at the start of this year. And with a deep sigh and a lot of regret, I realized I have to walk into this abyss and do this. So we set up an interview that emanated from Virgil's apartment here in suburban Pittsburgh. We filmed an interview. We got everything out there. We got Virgil's side of every urban legend and Virgil story and myth and anything you've ever heard. We talked to Virgil about it. We give you his side. And we also hear from a lot of his critics via Facebook post, via video. So we give you both sides, much like I did with Montreal a couple of years ago, Montreal Theory, where you get both sides of the story and you can figure out what you think is the truth. So, too, do we do with the legend of Virgil. You'll hear everybody's miserable, negative experiences about dealing with this man. Virgil explains himself, and you know what? Is he misleading? Is he a con man? Or is he a, excuse me, is he a shrewd businessman? Is he misleading, or is he misunderstood? You guys at home will figure that out. I have my answer. But, the fun is in the journey, because this is literally the most absurd and ridiculous thing I've ever done. And there's really no other way I could have done this but make it absurd and ridiculous.
And the one thing I want to point out is that this story has gone so far. There have been Deadspin posts about this. So this entire story is mainstream. And a lot of people who probably don't even watch wrestling right now, they probably have either heard or read a Virgil story in their lifetime, because it has been on Deadspin and places like that.
And that's why I want to get this out there, because, again, Virgil will kind of prey on John Q. Wrestling fan and you know, talk himself up as a huge commodity and then charge, you know, $20 or $30 for a signed photo and then another $20 or $30 for a photo op with him. Just these outrageous prices. But, you know, he goes to the places where people don't know any better. You know, they don't know that you can maybe go to an independent show and meet someone of an equal or greater star value for, sometimes a fraction of that. So I think it's important to get that out there so people can see Virgil's not a victim. And I've read these, like, Deadspin posts and these Reddit posts where they talk about, Virgil's homeless and he's down on his luck and he needs a buck and you know.
Apparently he needs $1 million.
And we'll get into that in a minute, too.
Oh, but, man.
I mean, I feel compelled to point out that at Steel City Con, those 3 days I was next to him, I have no shame admitting that he made more money than me there. Because of the prices he charges and because of his his tactics, he does well for himself. This is a regular living for him. I was at his apartment for a day, and lived to tell about it. So he's not living in a Ted DiBiase Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous like house. But this guy's not under a bridge. He's hustling and he's moving and he's doing what he can to make a solid living. And the GoFundMe page notwithstanding.
I do have a question, and I'm sort of being serious here. Is this just him being a shyster, or do you think is like a legitimate mental disability or some sort of an issue there? Because that's one of the things that I've wondered about every time I read one of these stories. Is it one of those things where, you know, he really is this bad of a guy, or is there something that, you know, we as fans don't know about?
Honestly, the best way I can answer that is I think in some respects, Virgil has lied so much, I think he believes some of it. But Virgil, I think, is very well aware of what he does, and he's very well aware that he has critics and haters out there, and I don't think that bothers him. I think he's somebody who embraces that emotional investment, whether it's positive or negative, obviously being in the business as long as he has. You know, I don't think he's necessarily the sharpest knife in the drawer, but I don't think that, again, he's not a victim here. He's not somebody that we should pity and feel sorry for. He's somebody that's very successful in what he does, and he has a method, and to some degree it works. And while everybody on the internet finds that hilarious and maybe justifiably so, there's still a very, very large market sample out there that are going to see Virgil at a flea market or a shopping mall or a pet expo or a downtown Christmas tree light up night. And yes, all of those were true and all of those are discussed on the DVD. Who will be in awe and have this hero worship for somebody they watched when they were a little kid. And let's face it, early 90s, late 80s, WWF is very much ingrained in our culture. And there are so many stars, whether it's Hulk or Andre or Macho Man or Warrior or Superfly or Jake the Snake. There are so many talents from that era that have crossed over into the mainstream to some degree. Obviously not to the degree of like Hulk or Rock, but where, you know, pretty much everybody can say, oh, I remember watching this, or I remember my kid watched this, or my husband watched this, or whatever the case is. So Virgil does have some degree of name value, some degree of notoriety that he can milk. But to me, it definitely seems like it's a well-calculated system that he's devised and certainly has made a lot of money from it.
Well, how can you argue with that? Really, what else is there left to say other than, you know, you have this DVD coming out. It's going to be a lot of fun. I also want to discuss with you some Global Force Wrestling. But before we get to that, you know, we like to keep this a family-friendly show. But, Joe, some of these chapters that I'm hearing on this DVD, some of the subject matters, I mean, how safe is this for kids? Come on, be real with us.
I guess the worst thing on the DVD is there are a few F-bombs. And there is a little bit of, insinuations of a sexual nature. And we do talk about a particular body part of his.
Let's get real. So one of the posts that you put up on your Facebook page was hearing a story about... his manhood is whatever, and that got apparently a lot of discussion going. So
it got a lot of discussion.
Apparently, you had to talk about it on the DVD.
There is a portion devoted to penis talk, and we do have some facts and figures that we researched up, and we do talk to Virgil about numbers, and everybody's heard about the. Again, part of the legend of Virgil, the reputation of him having a very large appendage, and again, we tackle every Virgil story, every myth, every outrageous claim that he's made, and I would be inclined to believe this particular Virgil story, this particular rumor about his appendage. Although to me, he takes it a bit too far in his bragging to where statistically it's a bit far-fetched. And I don't know, I don't know how detailed you want me to get here. I don't want to make you, sir, feel inadequate.
Let's save that for the DVD, okay? I'm perfectly fine.
Okay, but we go into double digits, is all I can say. So we get into we get into the facts and the numbers, and yeah, I'll just say I took his word for it. There was no actual demonstration, but there was an interesting story of when another comical wrestling legend saw it for the first time that he does share with us.
There you go. What more could you people want to know? Joe-Dombrowski.com to get to pre-order the DVD, correct?
Yes, you could save 20% right now if you pre-order it. You have about another little over a week to pre-order it. It officially is released July 29th. I will be down in Charlotte, North Carolina at the Mid-Atlantic Legends Fan Fest all weekend. July 30th through August 2nd, I believe, are those dates, Thursday through Sunday. And that will be the official release for The Legend of Virgil. That'll be your first chance to actually hold a copy of the DVD in your hand. We have a couple of previews up on YouTube right now. Just search Legend of Virgil. There's a little 30-second snippet from the interview. There's also a bonus clip of Virgil in a legitimate fight with three men at once. And we're going to release the official trailer, hopefully, a little bit later on this week. So the Virgil buzz keeps growing. And everybody has a Virgil story, Chris. Everybody around the wrestling world has encountered him in some form or fashion, it seems. So feel free to check out this DVD and compare your Virgil story to all the Virgil stories we cover on these discs.
So, Joe, you know, as you said when we first started the show, you just have a ton of projects going on. One of the things that you're doing now is you're working with Global Force Wrestling, and as they have their big TV tapings coming up in Las Vegas on July 24th, you wrote an article for them. What does GFW mean to professional wrestling? Everyone, you should go check it out, globalforcewrestling.com. So, but Joe, you know, why don't you give a little bit of a snippet here? What does Global Force Wrestling mean to the landscape of independent pro wrestling and pro wrestling in general?
Wow, that question was a mouthful. I'm very excited about Global Force Wrestling because I have been a fan of Jeff Jarrett for a very long time. And, you know, I speak as somebody who had followed the rise of TNA Impact Wrestling from day one, from June 19th, 2002, and seen their ebb and flow since then. And Jeff is the only guy in history that has taken a promotion from scratch and turned it into a global entity. No one else has done that. But I'm excited, and one of the things that makes me most excited about the landscape of wrestling right now is there is more variety and more options for a mainstream wrestling fan than maybe ever before. You know, there is there are shows devoted to the Japanese style, to the Lucha Libre style, to the more fast-paced, you know, up-and-coming, I guess, independent style. You have your mainstream American style. Whatever you want, whatever your cup of tea is, there's somewhere to you know, to satiate yourself. But it seems like Global Force Wrestling is invoking elements of all of that. You know, anybody that's followed the house shows has seen the Bullet Club, Gallows and Anderson and the Young Bucks and what they've done, dominating a lot of the events. We see a Lucha Libre influence on these tapings in Vegas, six-man tag. There's a Bestia Say, who I know from Extreme Rising a couple of years back. And you got a lot of talent like the former Justin Gabriel, J.P. Black, like the former Kurt Hawkins, Brian Myers, Chris Mordetsky, who really have not had the opportunity to be themselves and be on a national and global platform as themselves. And it's an even playing field. It is a chance for everybody to step up. It is a cutting-edge company. Is not insulting your intelligence. It's putting pro wrestling first. I really enjoy a lot of the video packages on their YouTube, where they are not writing stories, they're telling stories. Because I've seen in my years a lot of times the reality of the issue is far more compelling than anything that you can come up with in a boardroom. And the fact that you have this entire roster from Sanjay Dutt to Nick Aldis to Kongo Kong coming from different backgrounds, different promotions, different geographic locations, all coming together with a common goal. They've each had their own unique journey, their each unique path with their own roadblocks, their own detours, and it's all ended them up intersecting here in Las Vegas. It's very cool to me. I love the Grand Slam Tour. I was doing some sales work for Jeff and for Global Force, and I had a chance to be at the events in Erie and in Cleveland. And see a bit of a different side of it. You know, your live events are always a little old school than your tapings are. But it was fun. You know, the event just flew by. Everybody there enjoyed themselves, speaking as staff and as fans. But that's just one element. And I'm happy to be doing some writing for the Global Force site. I'm happy to be sharing my passion and my interest in professional wrestling and GFW with the general population. And I'm looking forward, just as anybody, to see the fallout of Las Vegas, because I think that's when things will really start to take shape, and we'll see what the GFW vision will be on a grand platform.
Are you going to be there?
I will not be there, no.
That is a
well,
shame.
I mean, I definitely, you know, never will complain about an extra day at home at this point in time with everything I do. But I do greatly appreciate that. I'm very happy doing some sales work on the Grand Slam Tour and doing some writing now. Who knows what the future will hold? You know, never rule anything out. But right now, all I can do is you know, support the company and whatever's handed to me, make it the absolute best I can, and hopefully the company will continue to grow.
Well, Joe, we appreciate you spending some time on the newscast with us. We're going to go over some of that Global Force Wrestling news, their new championships, the lineup for Las Vegas show. But for everyone listening, let them know where they can find, you know, the DVD, the pre-orders, your Twitter, whatever you have going on.
Well, the main website is joe-dombrowski.com. You can check out all of the DVDs I've done. We'll have the trailer up for The Legend of Virgil and his traveling merchandise table as soon as it's ready. Pre-order it now and save 20%, or it officially comes out July 29th. And anybody that orders will get their order shipped out that same day, right before I leave for Charlotte. And then I'll be down at the Mid-Atlantic Fan Fest in Charlotte all weekend. And certainly you can look them up for more details on that as well. NWALegends.com, I believe, is their website. But you can find me on social media, on Twitter at @Joe_Dombrowski, Facebook.com/Joe Dombrowski Wrestling. Search me out on YouTube as well. And of course, as you know very, very well, my friend, all my other DVD releases, Finding Zach Gowan, Montreal Theory, Refereeing 101, AJ Styles, The Missing Matches, and of course the Prime Cuts series, first 5 volumes of 10 released now. All great buys, and I appreciate any support you guys can give me. I'm one guy working out of my home, you know, trying to make a difference in the world. So, you know, a purchase of my products supports a smaller than small business, and it allows me the chance to continue to make these projects. And for whatever reason, you do not want to support anything I'm doing, then I encourage you to get out there and find what you do enjoy, what you do love about pro wrestling, and support that. Support it with your dollar, legally and ethically, because that's the only way you can make a difference, is with your dollar.
Absolutely. Joe, thank you for coming on and talking to us. We will have you on again probably when the thing is officially all put out there, and we'll discuss Virgil and some Global Force Wrestling.
You know what? You are so much more of a pleasure to talk to than Virgil. I don't think you've lied to me once yet, other than telling me how great I am.
Well, you know, wrestling.
We got to butter up our guests, Joe. We're putting you over. That's what we do.
I'm just not used to it. I'm used to being in the shadows, and everybody goes, who's that guy, and why is he wearing such a nice suit?
It is a nice suit, Joe. Have a good evening,
all right,
sir.
You too, my friends. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so that was Joe Dombrowski. We thank him for being on the show. I mean, some fun stuff. You know, you gotta keep it lighthearted. Particularly after this week, Jerome. Man, a lot of news is kind of all came from everywhere, and you know, it all kind of started the Monday after we released last week's newscast. We thought that one was going to be kind of busy, but let's talk about some results from this past weekend. Of course, pwponderings.com/results. We got them for Empire Pro, AAW, Ring of Honor, 2CW, and more. So go check it out. But let's talk about some AAW. Jerome, you weren't at the show, but from the sounds of the results, seem pretty awesome.
My sources told me this is one of the best AAW shows of the year. So I will be definitely checking out the DVD and the MP4 from smartmarkvideo.com very soon. A lot of good stuff. Tommaso Ciampa and Chris Hero, heard nothing but good things about that, as well as Ethan Page and Johnny Gargano. A lot of really good stuff. I am looking forward to seeing the DVD. It was unfortunate that I was not able to be there.
They do return on August 9th. So,
Sunday,
yeah, that's
August,
good. But
that
yeah.
is a special start, Sunday day, 3 p.m. start time, and Evan Bourne. Matt Sydal's going to be there.
I mean, hey, you know what? Actually, more people probably do know him as Matt Sydal at this point. But yeah, no, it sounded like a really good show. So with all those results, like Drum just said, some of the highlights, Ethan Page, Johnny Gargano. Yeah, I mean, it just sounds like a great match. And then Tommaso Ciampa, Chris Hero. Eddie Kingston was there at the show, kind of a squash match, but he was there. And OI4K defeating the Hooligans to retain their tag titles. So lots of good stuff. Ring of Honor also had a show in, ironically, I guess, Las Vegas. I mean, you know what? This is one of those times where, Jerome, we've talked about it. The Aftershock Tour shows, stuff like that. Sometimes we don't necessarily pay attention too much to the results because we know that in terms of storyline, there's not a lot of impact. But you know what? This time around, man, they did have a mini number one contender tournament for the TV title. Christopher Daniels defeated Mark Briscoe. ACH defeated Frankie Kazarian. Sorry. I'm trying to configure
this show
something
certainly
here.
Felt
Bobby
more
Fish.
Relevant than a lot of other ROH house shows. I'm sure part of that is because they went to Las Vegas. But, I mean, if you look at the show, Austin Aries wrestling in a Ring of Honor ring is a pretty big deal, and having this TV title tournament, you know, again, that's pretty significant.
Yeah, I was just about to say, you know, so we had Bobby Fish defeating Matt Taven. Bobby Fish went on to win the three-way elimination match to become number one contender for the TV title. And then in the main event, Jay Briscoe, Don Castle, and Kyle O'Reilly defeated Jay Lethal, the Ring of Honor World and TV Champion, Austin Aries, and Moose when O'Reilly made Lethal tap. I mean, Jerome, they pretty much have set up Red Dragon to be the number one contenders, getting some singles pushes coming out of the show. I mean, your thoughts on that?
Fine with me. I mean, they're two really good wrestlers, so I think it makes a lot of sense. This is what you have to do. You have to position some challengers for Jay Lethal's Ring of Honor World title at this point. And that is that's obviously a really big deal. It's really, really important to be able to do that right now. So I think it's important that they incorporate as many different wrestlers as they can onto this roster and into title contention. I think Bobby Fish is a great challenger for either singles title, and Jay Lethal and Kyle O'Reilly. They had a really good match in Hopkins, Minnesota. That was a 30-minute draw. And I fully expect another really good match from those two. So there's a lot to look forward to. This is, you know, so there are some ROH house shows that are pretty pointless. This was not, or at least this does not seem pointless.
Yeah, you know, particularly when you think of it that with how we understand it, and, you know, Ari, Chris Mickey, and myself, we have the podcast of Honor out right now. We discuss this a little bit. You have the possibility of Jay Lethal having to defend both titles against both members of Red Dragon in one night. Not saying that that will happen, but that's kind of how this has all been built up. Of course, we're all headed to Death Before Dishonor on Friday, which should be a big show as well. You can check out the full preview, like I said. But, you know, Jerome, I'm not saying that this is a quote-unquote huge show for Ring of Honor, but it's on iPay-per-view, so, you know, it's still pretty major. Roderick Strong going for the title. I think, you know, Ari, Chris Mikio, myself, we talked about what we think will most likely happen. Do you have any thoughts in terms of the direction of Ring of Honor right now?
Well, I think it's going to be a really good match. The only question is there going to be a lot of interference like we saw with the Lethal Briscoe match? I think one of the other things that Ring of Honor really needs to be concerned about, and granted, Destination America is not their only source of income at this point, and I have not had a chance to listen to the newscast, or I'm sorry, the ROH podcast yet. I will be doing that later on this week, but, you know, for me, I think that one of the things that Ring of Honor needs to do is they really need to do a better job of distinguishing the characters and having some better matches on the TV, because, you know, you look at some of the recent TV episodes, they've been a little lackluster. You know, it seems like the decade is on every week and they are just the most uninteresting tag team going on right now. And I think there are some compelling characters. You know, I look at guys, obviously the Briscoes, ACH, Moose. I mean, you've got some guys who have some charisma, who I think you can build up. But, you know, I think what Ring of Honor needs to do is they almost need to take a page from NXT and start to build some video packages around these guys and get people invested in the Ring of Honor product. Because, like we've talked about a ton, Chris, you know, the wrestling in Ring of Honor is going to be top-notch. It's going to continue to be the strength of the promotion. But unfortunately, some of the characters and some of the storyline aspect of things, not something that Ring of Honor does very well. If you look at the Death Before Dishonor card, that's a perfect example of that. There's a lot of really good matches, and it's going to be a really good card, but you look at a lot of the matches, and there really isn't a whole lot of storyline or character behind them, and I think that's one of the major issues. Obviously, you know, Cedric Alexander and Moose certainly have a history, and, you know, it's not that all of the matches don't, but it feels like, you know, half of the matches seemingly don't really have a purpose on the card except for, oh, this is going to be really good. And, you know, there's nothing inherently wrong with that, but I think it is an issue for Ring of Honor when you're trying to be a nationally televised company and you're competing against a promotion like Lucha Underground, which has distinct characters, when you're competing with NXT, which is developing its own identity, whether it's, you know, regardless of what you think of NXT, clearly it is a hot brand right now based on the fact that it has sold thousands of tickets to the Barclays Center for their NXT TakeOver events. So I think Ring of Honor needs to pull back a little bit and really evaluate how they're figuring out their characters and try to build these guys up a little bit more beyond just, oh, this guy's a wrestler.
I agree. And you know what? It does kind of work into some of the news that was announced earlier. But right now, I do want to add in, Brian, are you there?
Yo, yo, yo.
What's going on, man? Of course, you're on the show to preview some PWG, but you know what? The G1 started this week. How, you know, I guess, appropriate is that New Japan also announced some news during the press conference. They have announced working deals with Ring of Honor, WXW, Revolution Pro out of the UK, Global Force Wrestling, the NWA organization. I mean, I thought a lot of this kind of obvious to us, but you know, they also mentioned they will probably be going public on the Japan stock market, the Nikkei. And, you know, it's just one of those things where the timing just kind of all comes together. There were some mistranslations on reports out there. You know, I mean, to no really anyone's fault, you know, translations being what they are. They are not working with WB. They're not working with NXT. What they were talking about is a Young Lions program similar to that of NXT. But before I get Jerome's reactions to that, I mean, you know, you watch New Japan a lot. And I know, Jerome, you're starting your kind of your diaries right now watching the G1, which I think is awesome, by the way. But, Brian, when you heard this news, was a lot of it just kind of stuff that obviously we all knew, they just had never really put it out there in such a public forum, or were you genuinely surprised and looking forward to this?
Well, that's kind of what they've been doing before, mainly with CMLL. That's where Shinsuke Nakamura kind of got his current persona when he went down there. Same thing with Tetsuya Naito. He came back and came back with his Stardust persona. So it's not really surprising. Well, it's kind of surprising they announced like Revolution Pro and some of the other WXW, I think, and because normally you don't see the New Japan Young Lions go over there. It's normally over to Mexico or the States, so that was kind of the most surprising of the news, I think. But I think that'll fit in for guys like David Finlay Jr., obviously, who can go over to Europe and really get that cult following because of that European background with his father. And then, of course, Jay White can come to the States and, you know, get a following here. So I guess you can kind of mix it up with some, you can get some international guys and kind of territorialize them, I guess you would say, kind of like with Hideo Itami and NXT, what they're doing with Japan and WWE right now. So I can see their kind of plan, kind of basing it off a little bit of the NXT of the last year, mixing up with their current plans from before with CMLL. So it's very exciting. And considering that the four guys who are probably going to benefit the most right off the bat, of course, are Jay White, Sho Tanaka, Yohei Komatsu, and David Finlay Jr. So it's going to be really exciting for those guys. I think maybe next year we'll finally see an excursion for those four. Maybe not so David Finlay Jr. because he's kind of a fresh young lion, but maybe the other three will get an excursion. Maybe we'll see Jay White in the States. Maybe we see Sho Tanaka and Revolution Pro, and maybe, you know, Yohei Komatsu and CMLL. So we can get a very mixed up kind of young lions out in the same, you know, out at the same time, but out in different parts of the world. So it could be really exciting. And to me, those are the four guys who can be the, you know, who are going to lead the junior division probably about 3 or 4 years, if you think about it. I mean, where they're primed out right now, I mean, you had Sho Tanaka going to the NOAA junior tag or junior heavyweight league. So there's a lot of mixing up going around, and it's only going to benefit these four guys. And I think they're trying to groom them to be kind of what the 90s junior division of New Japan was, to be that kind of draw that it can be. So it's really exciting. Kushida, of course, is going to be leading the way, but the other four are going to be up behind him really soon. So,
Jerome, what were your thoughts on Ring of Honor? Well, New Japan really announcing a, you know, this relationship with Ring of Honor, which we all kind of assumed they had, you know, in the NWA as well. But this is big news, right? This is something some fans, I guess, for us to get really excited about, even though maybe we kind of intuitively knew it was happening.
I mean, to me, I look at the G1 field right now. I mean, you look at some of the ages of the wrestlers, and they really need to start doing this. I mean, they really are going to need talent. And I think it's an issue right now for New Japan. I think they certainly are not dying, or they're not in any sort of trouble. But if you look 3-4 years down the road, there's a lot of the guys that you're seeing in the G1 now who are either going to be retired or in significantly less of a role. I mean, you've got a lot of older guys. I mean, a guy like Tenzan is, you know, 44. You know, Makabe is an older guy. Tanahashi is no youngster either. Nakamura is, I think he's 34 or 35. So you've got a lot of guys who are going to be, you know, having to take a step back. And I think New Japan, their obligation is going to be there to their stockholders, and they've really got to do a better job of building up stars, because we look at WWE and we see what happens when you don't do that. So New Japan needs to look at what WWE is doing and go the complete opposite direction. And obviously, you know, building up someone like Okada, you know, that's going to help them. Building up Ibushi, that's another great way of doing that. You know, there's a lot of relationships that New Japan has, and obviously the one with DDT has been very, very productive, because it's through that that they've been able to acquire the services of both Ibushi as well as Kenny Omega. So New Japan having these relationships, it makes a huge difference, because it makes them a worldwide company that is willing to work with a lot of different places, and it makes them the true number two promotion in the world right now. I mean, look, there's no way that New Japan is going to be bigger than WWE. That's not even a reality right now. But they can very much put their foot in the ground as the number one, as the number two company in the world, with these relationships and by stockpiling a lot of quality talent from a lot of different continents and countries. And sometimes when you build these relationships, it really does make a difference in the quality of your product and just on your reputation as well.
Yeah, you know, I got a chance to watch night one of the G1, and, you know, I enjoyed it a lot. You know, the last two matches, I think, universally praised. I enjoyed the heck out of them. There was that tag match, you know, like we mentioned in the chat room with Elgin, which I thought was a good showing of what he could do. I mean, he was also in there with, you know, Kojima and Taguchi against Okada, Ishii, and Gedo, and, you know, a lot of fun spots in there, particularly, you know, he does the double Samoan drop kind of stuff, and that was impressive doing it on Okada and Ishii. Jerome, I know that you got a chance to watch it. Did you only watch the singles matches, the G1 pertinent matches,
yes,
on the show? Did you
watch some of the tag? I will not watch any of the multi-tag team matches unless I hear really good things. I may go back and watch the six-man tag involving Elgin.
Yeah, just to see how he's doing, right?
But, I mean, if you watch the five matches, there were two that were really good. Ibushi and Tanahashi will be a match of the year contender, probably be in my top 10 at the end of the year. It is one of the best matches that I've seen, and that ending sequence is one of the best things that I've seen all year. Those two guys really brought it. And, you know, I wasn't as high on Shibata and Styles as a lot of other people were. I saw some very high ratings, 4 stars, 4.5 stars, but certainly really good. It was Shibata has that crowd behind him. He is he's pretty much going to be the underdog, and with that bandage, I mean, I don't know how serious that is, but that guy is going to walk out of this tournament a real warrior. And the good thing for the G1 this year, and boy, are they're extremely lucky, because if they were under the schedule that they've been under the last couple of years, I don't see how Shibata even makes it through the tournament, because there's a lot of grueling singles matches that he's going to have to wrestle And in some cases, he's really going to have to carry the load, so to speak. But, you know, obviously, AJ Styles in the G1 is going to be really great. Honestly, anything involving Bad Luck Fale and Doc Gallows is going to be a disaster in this tournament. I think it's really going to hurt. I look at Doc Gallows' performance in particular, just the laziest, brand of wrestling that you'll see in 2015.
I liked what you wrote about it because it was the exact thought I had while I was watching. I was like, this is a SmackDown match.
That's exactly what I said in my diary. I think I said, this is the kind of match that you would see on SmackDown. It was bad. And Tenzan is hurt. To be fair, Tenzan is hurt. But, I mean, still.
Tenzan's always hurt.
What?
Tenzan's always hurt, for the record. Like, always hurt.
And he's 44 years old. I mean, what do you expect? I mean, I'm more angry at Doc Gallows for sucking than I am Tenzan, because he's obviously beat up and injured and hurt. I mean, a Bad Luck Fale. I mean, watch the match with Naito, and I don't see how anyone could possibly give that match more than, I'd say, 2.5 stars, because it wasn't good. Naito was fine. I think his character work was actually really good, and I am more interested in Naito than I've ever been, just because I'm intrigued to see where his character goes. But Bad Luck Fale, I mean, you saw the way that he took some of those moves and some of the bumps. He can't move.
Yeah, it was pretty disappointing. Not disappointing, because there shouldn't have been any expectation for it to begin with. But yeah, that match. Brian, did you get a chance to watch that one?
I actually stayed up really late to watch the tag matches, and then I just dozed off at like 12 in the morning. Well, I got work, and then I started dozing off, so.
Imagine if you stayed up the first hour of that show. You're getting all tag team matches.
Yeah, I know.
Doc Gallows.
I'll put it this way. Did you see in the opening tag match that one spot between Nagata and Hanma where it was like just throwing him to the ropes and it was a complete botch? Like, just imagine that, but just so much of that in the Bad Luck Fale. I mean, just that guy. I get why they have him in the group. I don't know. That match with Naito was just... there was that one spot, and I think, Jerome, you even wrote about this, is the spot where it was clear that Naito was supposed to kind of do a Hurricane Rana, and it just, all kinds of bad.
I mean, all kinds of bad. The Bullet Club, they need less bullets right now, and it's not good. Block A has the potential to be really poor at times. I don't understand why Block B got the two single cams. I don't know if it's a Tanahashi thing or what, but Block B, to me, is way better and way more interesting. The only guy is Yujiro. That's pretty much the only guy in Block B that I have no interest in seeing. But everybody else, I think, can either have good to great matches. I certainly include Michael Elgin in that category as well, given the quality of his opponents. And you know that he's going to be supremely motivated to deliver in a big way. So.
Oh, man, the reaction he got for the double Samoan drop on... not just Okada, but Ishii as well, who's not a small man. They popped for it, and it was very impressive to see.
Take it over with that crowd. So, and actually, I don't think those tag matches are random, because I was looking at it last night, and I was actually chatting with Akuma last night on Twitter about it. Each tag match sets up the preceding singles match in that block on the next show. So, if you want these tag matches to really mean something, I would have, like, out of nowhere, just like a guy in the G1 getting pinned by the guy who he's facing on the preceding show to get his win back. So that way, at least, like, oh man, great, now I gotta pay attention to these tag matches, because all of a sudden they mean something now. Because I didn't even notice it at first until last night, until Hanma and Nagata had that face-off, and I looked at the schedule, and I was like, hey, they're facing off in the next show. And then I started putting the pieces together. Nakamura and Anderson are in the next show, and then the other tag matches set up the other singles matches, so maybe we should pay attention, because...
Imagine that, booking where the matches actually make sense into the progression of where they're headed with characters.
That's shocking. I mean, they can do that, that's fine, but I don't want to lose my mind by the end of this tournament, so I'm just going to watch the G1 matches, and anything important that happens in the tag match, I can either read about and then choose to watch, or just read about and then skip.
Yeah, I mean, like, the tag match with Yujiro and Cody Hall, I mean, it was a fine tag match.
Oh, yeah,
but
I went to the bathroom
have...
that show.
Yeah, it wasn't a match
you
had to
see.
I
want to make it very clear that I think this schedule is much, much better. I think it's more optimal for fans who only want to watch the G1 matches, that they could just skip the tags and be done in 90 minutes to 2 hours, and obviously it benefits the wrestlers. because, you know, they get days off. I mean, obviously, you know, the Block B guys, you know, they wrestled in tag matches, but then they have a couple days off. And then the Block A guys have basically Thursday off. You know, technically they're in tag matches, but no, I don't think those guys are really taking it all that seriously, save for a couple bumps here, a couple maneuvers there. And really, I think it's just easier on fans because you get to concentrate on one block per night, and that's it. You don't have to watch 10 matches from both blocks, try to keep track of things. Really, it's just easier on everyone the way that this is formatted, and based on the streaming service that is New Japan World, it's optimal for them as well because it's a ton of content.
I agree. And I got to say this about the Shibata bandages. In hindsight, I think it's only going to make his match that much more awesome because that's going to be the story of the match, obviously. And if they just build every single match around it, you could really have some really intense drama. Because, I mean, if you remember that Sakuraba match, I mean, just the emotion on his face when he was trying to get out of those holes, you know, just imagine him trying to fight out of like an arm lock, you know, and just fighting through the pain and the bandages will just add to it, I think. So
I don't know.
Right. It's kind of the same thing as Ishii. It's like, you know that he is probably legit injured, but how injured is he? But it draws that realism into the match.
I don't know how much they're gonna work over his arm. I mean, if you watch the AJ Styles match, Styles was working over the leg.
the calf killer is his.
And I
understand
that, but I don't know, like, his arm might be in really bad shape if Styles is going to work on the leg when that bandage is clearly there. And admittedly, again, you know, I know the calf killer is his maneuver, but, I mean, still.
Well, I mean, it did, and they did play that off. It wasn't like he just randomly went after it. It was during, that kicking sequence on the outside, and AJ Styles moved, and Shibata just laid right into the ring post with his leg.
I don't think it's necessarily a critique of the match. I mean, obviously, if Shibata's arm is in really bad shape, then I don't touch it, but I think that this injury could potentially be very serious, and Shibata's gonna gut it out.
Hey man, that guy, he's real. He's the real deal.
Stubborn as he is, but you know, it's kind of what you expect out of that kind of mentality in New Japan. So,
well, you're gonna do it for the G1. You know, whether you're injured or not, you're gonna make it. I mean, so, but yeah, no, really great night one. I thought all the matches were what they had to be. None of them were like, well, obviously, you know, maybe the Tanahashi and Ibushi match. Yeah, definitely one of the top 10 matches of the year, but it wasn't too excessive. You know what I mean? It was the right main event for night one, and it got you excited for the rest of the tournament because I don't think they pulled out all the stops. So I think there's more to come. But yeah, overall, I think everyone liked it. I do encourage everyone go check out the review. Voices of Wrestling did one. And Jerome, your diary is going to continue, correct? I know you're not watching it live, but probably after every event, you're going to have something up?
I value my sleep and I value my sanity, so it will be on a few-hour delay. So on Thursday and Friday, I probably should get them up pretty quickly thereafter. Saturday and Sunday, I'm not sure. I mean, the schedule is more optimal, but there are some days that it's going to be, especially on the weekends, it'll be a little tough. But I will definitely be diarying. That's not even a word. I will be doing diaries of every show, including the G1 final. I'm not sure if I'm going to write about every match on the G1 final, but I will for sure watch the last match, as well as the junior tag involving Red Dragon and the Young Bucks, which is going to be spectacular.
Well, while we're still on the topic, let's just talk about the big news that happened. New Japan legend Jushin Thunder Liger is going to be at the NXT TakeOver show in Brooklyn. This news literally took the world by storm. I mean, I saw it. I retweeted it probably just milliseconds after NXT put it out there for breaking news. And the internet just died. It was over. Everyone was going crazy. What does this mean? Because on the same night for that show, Field of Honor is happening. You have Okada, Kushida, and Nakamura all participating for the Ring of Honor show. So people started wondering what's going on. Dave Meltzer put out there, you know, that there was some speculation of things going on behind the scenes. You know, I probably took a little bit too positive a look at it and kind of said, oh, maybe they're working on something together. Because God knows that wrestling could deal with that. But no, apparently there's some, you know, we're hearing some rumors. We're all hearing some stuff. We're not going to say anything that, you know, put anything out there that's not official. But, you know, this is not as going to be so great. Maybe. We'll see. But, you know, the news was huge. And Jerome, I mean, in terms of, you don't see any ramifications for this, right? It's Liger at NXT, but it's not like all of New Japan is going all in with WWE and forgetting Ring of Honor.
I mean, right? If I'm Ring of Honor, I'm still pretty pissed because I mean, Jushin Liger in a WWE ring, that's a big deal. I mean, this guy...
Tyler Breeze, man. Tyler
I mean,
Breeze.
It's a big deal. Look, it doesn't matter who he's wrestling. It's a big deal. I mean, Liger's had a 30-year career, and he's never been in a WWE ring, and he's going to be in a WWE ring August 22nd. I mean, you know, WWE's going to have a lot of 50-year-olds wrestling that weekend, and Liger's the only one of them that can still go at this point. So... it's going to be a really big deal, and I'm excited for it. I'm legitimately interested. Just the sight of him in a WWE ring. I mean, who would have ever thought that we would see Sting and Jushin Thunder Liger wrestle in a WWE ring? I mean, what were the odds of that, you know, in 1995? Just, I mean, these are two guys who were on the very first episode of Nitro, and you're talking about two guys who are probably going to be wrestling on the same weekend in Brooklyn, New York. So Brooklyn is obviously going to be the place to be. I don't know what Ring of Honor's attendance is going to be like, because from what everything we're hearing, there's going to be about 13,000 to 15,000 people at the Barclays Center for an NXT show, not SummerSlam, but the NXT show. So, man, it's a really big deal, and it'll be interesting to see what happens here.
Brian, did your brain just explode when you saw that on the internet?
At first, yes, and then when I read that Tyler Breeze was his opponent, I was kind of taken down a bit, to be honest. But like Jerome said, it really doesn't matter who the opponent is. It's kind of like a dream for a lot of wrestling fans. But for all we know, this could be just like a one-off.
Hey, man, it could be just as good as him versus Dalton Castle. It could be.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. But you know, you never know. This could be like a favor for Devitt or something. You know, it's like, hey. You know, we want to draw some people to the show. You mind calling your homie Liger up? I don't think he's got anything going on that weekend. You know, you never know. I'm just saying, like, sure, it could be this big political thing, but it could be just this one-off, and that's it. You know, it's not like a big, you know, it'd be something if there's this major announcement between, you know, New Japan and WWE, but they mainly just focus on Liger, so I don't know if this is more like a Liger deal as opposed to like a New Japan deal, because then...
Right, Liger filling in that bucket list thing. Like, hey, come on, just let me once wrestle in WWE.
Yeah, you know, like, you never know. And I think it's just, it might be a little less than what we think it could be overall in the long term. So I don't want to get too excited. And, you know, I mean, people come in for a few shots in NXT and kind of just, that's it. So you never know.
Yeah, and it's not like Liger signed with them. He doesn't even have a Rhino deal, if that's what we're calling it now. So it's like, you know, some people going, oh, man, this is it. It's like, come on, let it go. You know, the other matches happening in Field of Honor, I think, are still more intriguing than Liger versus Breeze. But, I mean, it is a big deal. Don't get me wrong.
I would go to Field of Honor before I went to NXT, regardless of who Liger's wrestling. I just think Ring of Honor's card is better.
And not just, you know, hey, and not saying that Balor-Steen is going to be a bad match, because it's going to be good, but we saw it, and we saw what happened. So there you go. And I mean, I guess maybe a similar fate as to what happened with Owens at Battleground. Apparently that was a great pay-per-view. No? Okay.
No, Chris. Okay. It was just a good pay-per-view. Not at all.
I heard some matches were good.
There were some good matches, but the booking was a disaster, Chris. A disaster.
I believe you. All right, so why don't we get into some at this weekend? There's a ton of big shows going on, particularly the PWG one. I want to get to that. The Global Force Wrestling, the TV tapes are happening. So I'm going to breeze through some of this news here. Ring of Honor, they announced the Super Card of Honor 10 taking place in Dallas, Texas next year during WrestleMania weekend. Tickets are on sale right now. Hopefully I get mine in time, unlike last time. But yeah, big news there. CZW also announced nationwide pay-per-views with Stonecutter to distribute them. It's going to be October's Tangled Web and December's Cage of Death.
I have a great Stonecutter joke on Twitter that nobody retweeted or favorited, so to hell with all of you.
I missed the Stonecutter joke.
I mean, the Stonecutter joke. Brian, did you see it?
When was this?
When CZW announced, I said, who made CZW a star?
I
included a picture of the Stonecutters.
That's okay. Anyway,
you go to hell.
3-hour live pay-per-views. They're going to be taking place on Sundays from Philadelphia, most likely the National Guard Armory there. I mean, these are the big shows. We've talked about it, Jerome. Cage of Death, Tangled Web, not our cup of tea, but they are the Death Match annual shows. And you know what? It's not going to surprise me if people are really going to buy these pay-per-views. Not saying they're going to be huge numbers, but the interest is there. And, you know, this is a good deal for CZW.
Dylan Hales will not be reviewing any of these shows.
Damn it, Jerome. Why?
I don't think he liked the last CZW show he watched. Go listen to last week's newscast if you don't believe me.
This may change his mind, man. This may change his mind. It's Cage of Death. No? Probably not. So Global First Wrestling, the big show. I mean, Jerome, there are tons of shows this weekend. We brought Brian on to talk about PWG, but just get some of this Global Four stuff out of the way. You know, we want to thank again Joe Dombrowski for joining us. Big TV tapings. They're actual TV tapings taking place July 24th. Brian Myers going up against Chris Mordetsky, the former Chris Masters. Bobby Roode versus an opponent to be announced. Kongo Kong versus Nick Aldis, the former Magnus. And I'm pulling for Kongo Kong. I'm just throwing that out there officially. Chris Sabin is not going to be there, so I don't think they've announced who Kushida's tag team partner is going to be. I could be wrong. They're going up against Reno Scum. PJ Black, the former Justin Gable, going up against Seiya Sonata. Jigsaw versus Sanjay Dutt. Christina Von Erie versus Mickey James versus Lady Tapa. And then Bestia 666 versus the Blood Eagle versus Steve Payne. Phoenix Star, Zoker, and Mysterioso Jr. They, you know, they did announce, I believe it was actually the same day, that they will have four championships: the Global Championship, the Women's Championship, the Tag Team, and basically the X Division, the secondary title, the Next Gen title. I mean, Brian, I think that says it all. But did you have any thoughts? Did you want to say something about that?
There's no limits.
There really isn't. Jerome, I guess, are you excited about this? I mean, they have no TV deal, literally.
It's really strange to have TV tapings without a television contract. And if you look at the ratings for Lucha Underground, Ring of Honor, and TNA right now, and even WWE, I can't see a lot of people banging down the door to get access to these Global Force Wrestling tapes. So we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of really good talent. There's no doubt the shows will not be lacking for good wrestling. But like we always talk about, Chris, what are the stories behind the matches? What's going to be going on with this? And, you know, what's the atmosphere going to be like when they tape in Vegas? Are there going to be a lot of people there? I mean, these are all issues. We'll see what happens. I don't know how to feel about Global Force Wrestling right now, but certainly it's getting some guys some work, so that's obviously a good thing. And, man, Chris, we're rapidly running out of time here. We might have to preview PWG in the After Dark portion of the show.
OT.
We are going up there. But, hey, you know what? Let's just do this. Three Men Dis Four. It is happening. July 24th, PWG. Brian, you're going to be there live. They only have four announced matches, but, hey, worth the price of admission. The World Tag Titles on the line. The Young Bucks against Angelico and Jack Evans. Ricochet versus Akira Tozawa. That is going to be amazing, as I'm assuming most people know. World's Cutest Tag Team, Cancellary and Joey Ryan versus Team Tremendous. And then Mike Bailey versus Chris Hero. It's going to be a fun time. I'm assuming those aren't all the matches.
Music and Super Dragon. Like, especially...
not official yet, Brian. It's
I know,
not official.
But damn that fucking tweet that Biff did the other day, and I retweeted it. I got so excited. I thought they were going to announce something, and then they didn't announce anything. So, fuck! This is the perfect show to do it! And they're not announcing it. Maybe they just know that they have a sellout, and they're just not going to announce it, and then be like, yeah, you're going to see it. You know, just play it off casually, and just have everyone in the building freak out when they announce it, because... I'll freak out in the building if they announce it. So, yeah, man. Like, I really hope this match that I imagine in my head will happen, even though it kind of built it up to the point where it might not happen. So, yeah.
Well, you are getting Ricochet and Akira Tozawa.
Yeah, but
that's good.
Super Dragon destroying people again. Yeah, it's just it's really exciting to think about. If you think about it, just it's 2015. And we're talking about Super Dragon Wrestling.
Any other thoughts on the matches? Mike Bailey, Chris Hero, the tag
title
match.
Mike Bailey's gonna lose. Like I said before, he's not gonna win until Bola. Ricochet and Akira Tozawa is gonna be awesome, of course, and probably get emotional at the end because I think they like to cry, kind of like the Ric Flair kind of thing. But hey, you know, bro tears, man, bro man tears. And then, of course, the tag title match. I think it's going to be really interesting with Team Tremendous and the World's Cutest Tag Team, because I get the feeling that the crowd might subtly turn the World's Cutest Tag Team heel, just because they're already crapping on Joey Ryan as it is. Team Tremendous got really, really over at DDT4, and I think it's going to be an interesting atmosphere with this match. And I'm hoping that what happened to the Young Bucks back at DDT4 in 2008 doesn't happen to Candice and Joey, where the crowd just literally turned the Young Bucks, and they had no choice but to be heels by the next match in the tournament. So I'm hoping that the crowd doesn't turn the World's Cutest Tag Team, because that'd be really, really weird with Candice as a heel. Yeah, maybe it'll just be the one match, but yeah, it's kind of weird booking where with the double faces there. So yeah, that's about it with no other announced matches. So
I mean, hey, Mount Rushmore 2.0, it is what it is. Obviously, that won't Roderick Strong won't be there, so you can't have a PWG World Title match, because he might win the Ring of Honor World Title match. You never know; anything could happen. Jerome, do you have any thoughts on Tremendous Four?
No, I think Brian pretty much said it all. There's a lot of unknowns, so see what happens on Friday night.
We can call this Mystery Vortex 3.5 for all we know.
Friday night's a busy night, that's for sure.
It really is. I will be covering Death Before Dishonor live on our website. Obviously, check out the Podcast of Honor for a full preview of it. The world title match, Jay Lethal versus Roderick Strong. The Addiction versus War Machine versus Red Dragon versus The Kingdom. Four Corner Survival for the tag titles. HCH versus Adam Page. The Briscoes versus Roppongi Vice. Moose versus Cedric Alexander. Adam Cole versus Dalton Castle. And Will Ferrara versus Silas Young. All lots of fun. Jerome, do you have any thoughts on Death Before Dishonor?
It's like a really good show. That's really all there is to say about it at this point. I mean, I know that you, Ari, and Chris Michio probably talked the show to death, so I don't want to steal your thunder. But definitely go listen to the Podcast of Honor as soon as you get done listening to us for a full preview of Death Before Dishonor.
Yeah, so Friday night's going to be pretty busy for us.
D1 Live now that I think about it, because by the time I get home, it'll probably start, and I'm crazy enough to do it, so...
You heard it right there, folks. Brian's going to be pulling down.
I don't even know what's the... I think it's Tanahashi and... I think Tanahashi's headlining that night. I could be wrong. Probably wrong. But,
Tanahashi already headlined with the...
I think it's a block... I think it's a block A show on Friday.
Block
B is on Saturday, in early Saturday.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'll cover it both, then. Maybe we'll see. Depending on how much sleep I get and how bad I get drunk that night going out. So, we'll see.
There you go. Well, before we get out of here, of course, we want to encourage everyone to support local indie wrestling. Of course, lots of shows happening on Friday, like we said, Global Force Wrestling, Ring of Honor. We got those covered, but there's other shows going on as well. Also, this weekend, CWF Mid-Atlantic. They have a pretty big show coming up. We should have a preview of that up on the website probably by tomorrow. Yeah, by tomorrow. Lots of other shows as well, so go check them out. And as always... Jerome, before we get out of here, why don't we get in some plugs for what's going on with you?
Twitter.com/JeromePWPEditor is the place to find me on Twitter. You can also find a recent column I did on the resuscitation of singles titles at PWPonderings.com. Also, my G1 diaries that began today, they will continue throughout the rest of the week and into the weekend. Again, PWPonderings.com. Also, go to our Redbubble store and buy a shirt. I know Brian can talk more about that.
Yes, I'm on Twitter, Brian DeBrain. It's DA, not the. Redbubble.com/people/PWPondering/shop. I just added up a new design that, if you look at that picture of that leaf, I did not Photoshop that leaf. That's an actual leaf that I took a picture of about, what was that? I think the date is August 31st, 2014, which I think was the morning of Bola Night 3. So there you go, everybody. That all makes sense. And we just sold some merch of the Abraham Lincoln.
I think it were like posters.
Yeah, we sold some buttons and posters, stickers today. So thank you for supporting us, everybody. Every little bit helps, you know. And of course, support us and get a shirt, iPhone case, whatever. And if you want some graphic design work done, hit me up at Brian DeBrain. Maybe we can work something out. And thank you for all the feedback I got on the 24 Bola banners. Everyone loved that Angelico one. Shit, I didn't realize everyone was gonna love Angelico that much, but damn, there's a lot of a lot of Hispanic people that love Angelico, I've noticed, so that does not surprise me.
I would like to point out, Brian, that I have my iPhone 6 Plus is now in a PW Ponderings case.
Yes! Let the revolution begin.
There you go. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us and help supporting us, of course. Check out the store. Follow us on Twitter, on Facebook. We're going to have lots of results up this weekend, so we'll talk to you again next week.
Boom.